I'm just praying for the fucking day that Allen Robinson gets like an actual quarterback, you know, like even if it's just like, okay, Allen Robinson is now catching passes from Baker Mayfield or like from fucking.
Definitely Jameis after he takes over for Breeze. And they just ship Robinson down there.
You're listening to Let's Talk Fantasy Football, where men of fantasy genius have realized, hey guys, we don't need real football skills to dominate on the fantasy field. Oh, yeah. 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 So slap on your pads and grab your helmet. Shit's about to get real.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Let's Talk Fantasy Football. I'm your host tonight. My name is Nick Walsh, and I am here with my good friend. We are reuniting the dream team. I am here with Vinny Gonzalez. Vinny, what's going on, dude?
Not much, dude. Good to be back, as always.
Yeah, good to be back for another division preview. I know this is not football, but nice beer crack on this.
Yeah, try to do it slow.
Let everyone know what we're here to do. I'm going to smash my glass of whiskey so to make some sort of sound effect.
I am also drinking.
But yeah, I mean, we have, you know, we have sports slowly coming back. It seems like the NFL is, you know, not going to let anything derail it. Today we have the PGA, or I guess yesterday, we're recording this on Friday, 6/12. So yesterday we had the PGA Tour return with no fans, of course, but that has been nice. It satisfied my craving for some daily fantasy sports. I got 6 out of 6 in my lineup through the cut today, so that's looking nice. And you know, what better way to spend a Friday than constantly refreshing the PGA leaderboard pages to see how Joaquin Neiman and Doc Redman are golfing, see if they're going to make the cut, you know.
Dear God.
Yeah, so that's where I'm at with my life. But anyway.
I mean, I watched a fucking full NASCAR. I almost said game, but that was interesting too. I don't know. I was like pretty like brought into it. I don't know. Whenever you're gambling on something, though, it really changes the whole fucking thing. So
yeah,
I NASCAR, can't complain that you're doing that.
Yeah, I mean, NASCAR to me, like I always, because my dad was a big NASCAR fan, so like I always liked watching like the last 50 laps or so. I never go out of my way to do it, but it was always like. Like whenever it was on, I was like, yeah, this is fun, you know?
Yeah. It was cool. Definitely the last couple of laps, I'm just like, all right, now I get it. This is definitely what it's about.
The middle couple hundred laps are a little tough. Like that's when you watch the beginning, you get like the first maybe like 10 to 50 laps in, then you like go outside and mow the lawn, and then you come back, then you come back in and you watch the last 50 laps. I feel like that's how NASCAR is supposed to work.
But. See, I watched the whole thing. I wanted to really take it in for like the first time. And I was just like, okay, the middle really sucks, but otherwise pretty decent. I don't know. I had fun with it. I doubt I'm going to keep up with it, but we had our time.
Yeah. I mean, we watched that UFC fight. I've been like putting DraftKings lineups in on UFC. Like, I won a lot the first one and then have not won since then. So, you know, well, I think me and UFC are going to, you know, go back to arms distance and again at this point. But, you know, normally during the summer, I've got like my March through July, like run of like following golf and playing daily fantasy golf each weekend. So glad to have some of that back. But that's not what we're here for today. We are here to discuss the NFC North and to preview the NFC North, the second of our division previews. If you missed the first ones, we did do the AFC East. So if you want to hear us talk about how shitty the Patriots are going to be, or we hope they're going to be, then go ahead and check those out. There's two parts to it. Go ahead and check out both of them for those. And today we're going to go through part one of the NFC North. So that's going to be your Detroit Lions and your Chicago Bears. Interesting stuff, I think, from both teams. I have some takes for sure that I'm going to fire off. And then obviously part two will be the Vikings and the Packers. And if all goes according to plan, we will even have a little bit of commentary from fearless leader Shrek for part two. So keep an eye out for that. Vinny, you got anything else for the people, or should we dive right into the Lions?
Let's dive.
All right. So the Lions last year were fucking terrible. They finished 3-12. I think you can attribute a lot of that to Matthew Stafford only played 8 games in the year. You know, the second half of the season was on the shoulders of Jeff Driskel and David Blau. Never really going to work out too well. So, you know, they didn't play well. The defense was bad. They finished poorly. They got a high draft pick. They took Jeff Okuda, the cornerback from Ohio State. And now we've got Matthew Stafford coming back assumedly healthy with a pretty similar team overall. And, you know, we're looking at, I think, a pretty interesting team. Their 2020 win total is only 6.5. I personally find that a little bit undervalued. And I really think this could be the sleeper team in the division. So you know, we'll get into it a little bit, but the offensive coordinator is still Daryl Bevel. He really opened up the offense last year for Stafford. And I think the evidence of that, and this was something I honestly didn't realize until after the season when I actually looked at all the stats. When Matthew Stafford got hurt halfway through the season, he was 4th among quarterbacks in fantasy points per game. So right ahead of Jameis Winston, where Jameis Winston finished, and right behind, I believe, Dak Prescott, but I could be, or I forget exactly. I'm sorry. That's anyway.
Sounds right.
Yeah, Dak might have been 5th, and it might have been Deshaun Watson. I don't know exactly, but Stafford was, like, great. After those couple years with Jim Bob Cooter where he was dinking and dunking all over the place, Bevel really let him show off that arm strength and throw the ball deep to, you know, guys like Kenny Galladay and Marvin Jones. So going into this year, where do you value Stafford among quarterbacks?
I think I kind of view him in like the Phillip Rivers range where he always is. Like, I'm not going to overextend myself to get him, but he's an absolute value, like, no matter where he goes, because it's going to be late in drafts. No one's really gunning for him, but he can absolutely be a top 5 quarterback. And that's probably how you really should always view someone like a Rivers or a Stafford, especially when you employ the draft mentality that we do, where you're going to take a quarterback late, stockpile other positions, and just kind of take the value guy later. He should absolutely be targeted and viewed like that, because Stafford's done it before, coming back healthy from the back surgeries and whatnot. So really looking forward to probably having him on a lot of my teams where I'm waiting for quarterback, because that's usually what we do anyway.
Oh, yeah. And I think as, like, you know, the word gets out about how good Stafford was last year, his price might rise. For perspective, right now he's – and I've gone back to fantasy football calculators, 12-team PPR ADPs here, because Fantasy Pros One had some weird inconsistencies that I wasn't sure what to make of them. It would be like one guy would be like RB13, but then be like pick 17 overall. And then RB12 would be pick 20 overall, or like it was like really strange, and I didn't understand how to reconcile it. So anyway, went back to old reliable. Stafford's second pick in the 10th round, quarterback 13 overall, which, like, for me, perfect. Like, that's where I want to draft a quarterback, you know? And you can look back at my Twitter if you want to, at N Washington.
Nice plug.
Yeah, quick plug. I called a couple of months ago that the two late round quarterbacks that I'm going to plant my flag on were Stafford and Baker, and they're currently going as quarterbacks 13 and 14. That's a little teaser for the AFC North, which I'm sure you will want to be on, but,
maybe not now.
Fair enough. But yeah, man, like, Stafford was great last year until he got hurt, and it really flew under the radar. And I'm not saying he's going to repeat what he did necessarily, but the offense hasn't changed much. And if anything, the offense has been upgraded, because they still have those core 3 wide receivers. TJ Hockenson is going into his second year. The offensive line has got either stayed the same or maybe gotten a little bit better. And you replace JD McKissick as the pass catching back with DeAndre Swift. I mean, the only thing that could possibly, to me, lead to regression there are, you know, residual from Stafford being injured and, you know, the time off and that kind of thing, or people having more film on Daryl Bevel as the offensive coordinator for the Lions. But I don't think those outweigh the positives in this offense. So to me, Stafford is just a screaming value. And I think even if he does jump up the draft board a little bit, like, there's no way he's getting into like the top 6 or 7 quarterbacks. And I'm fine with taking him quarterback 8 or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah, no, it's like, it's dead on perfect. I love where he's going. I feel like it's not going to change, like you were just saying. And I feel like, I think Brady's behind him right now. Currently, I feel like Brady's going to pass him. So could be a little like tug and pull there, but it's just going to probably float around this same area. So love where he's going. Hope it stays and the hype kind of cools down.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see how it goes. But love Stafford as he is. Moving on to his pass catchers, we'll start with Kenny Golladay. Kenny Golladay is really being drafted high up there. He's currently the first pick of the third round. That's wide receiver 8. You know, that's, you're drafting him as a first rounder. Now, I think that's pretty fair, but what's your sort of take on Golladay? Do you think he's worth that high of a pick?
At first, I was like, you got to be fucking kidding me. Because, like, when you look at it on paper, you're just like, this is way too expensive for Kenny Golladay. And it's really not. Like, looking at the guys around him right now, it's like the mix of Golladay, Evans, Amari Cooper, Thielen. It's like a – it's basically preference. I don't know. It's kind of a cop-out thing to say, but Kenny Golladay is like a fucking stud. And whenever Matthew Stafford is on the field with him, he's going to throw deep to him. He's going to target him. I think it's like an average of eight targets per game. So he'll have a high volume, high touchdown upside, and the dude is a stud. So I like what you're doing there, and it seems like a high price, but it's really not for what you're getting.
Yeah, very much so. I think the thing to keep in mind when you do draft Golladay is that his ceiling and the way that he was used last year is like 2019 Mike Evans, where, you know, 1 week, maybe he has 3 targets, but then the next week, he has 9 targets and he goes off for 200 yards and 3 touchdowns, you know? So I think that's something to preface with all of these pass catchers for the Lions, is that you should expect wild inconsistency. And I think that's what makes Golladay, you know, such a slam dunk option over guys like Jones and Amendola. Our Jones and Amendola are within the range where you're going to have to make start-sit decisions on them every single week. You're going to have other wide receivers in that range where you're going to look at matchup and be like, fuck, who do I play here? And then maybe you miss a Marvin Jones 3 touchdown game. Kenny Golladay, when you draft him as the eighth wide receiver off the board, he's in your lineup every single week. So yeah, maybe you get those down games, but you're also absolutely getting those up games from him. You're getting those games where he, you know, puts out 200 yards and 2 touchdowns or whatever the case may be. And you referenced it before, but just to talk about his stats with Stafford last year, when Stafford was playing, he averaged 7.75 targets a game, just over 4 catches a game, 80 yards, and almost a touchdown a game. But within that, again, talking about the inconsistency, he had 4 100-plus yard games and 2 multi-touchdown games. So the big weeks were there. And even after Stafford was gone, the big weeks still continued to be there. So if we can get a full season out of Stafford, Kenny Golladay is going to be, you know, one of those inconsistent guy, but he will win you weeks single-handedly, I think, this year.
Yeah, and his targets just seem more valuable than some of the guys that are going around him at this time. Like, Stafford's going to go deep, and they're going to get chunk plays out of Golladay no matter what. So I feel like you're not really gambling on too much there, because he's going to get results out of those targets.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on to Marvin Jones and Danny Amendola. Amendola isn't being drafted currently. I don't think that's entirely wrong, because he was just really, really inconsistent. He did have a couple spike weeks last year. But Marvin Jones going at wide receiver 41, 8th pick in the 9th round. You know, I just mentioned that he's going to be harder to deal with because you're going to have to make start-sit decisions. But listen to these stat lines from when Stafford was healthy between Golladay and Marvin. And tell me really what the difference is here. So Golladay, 62 targets, 35 catches, 640 yards, 7 touchdowns. Marvin Jones in those same 8 games, 57 targets, 42 catches, 535 yards, 6 touchdowns. Like, that's not 6 rounds worth of difference.
Completely fair. It's tough to gauge with Marvin Jones, because even worse than, I guess, the inconsistencies from Kenny Golladay that you might get, you get a lot of it with Marvin Jones, because he's so touchdown dependent. Even though he might be, like, on paper looking very similar, it's a very different sort of skill set Marvin Jones has, and he's kind of this weird burner that'll catch heavily contested touchdown passes here and there, but his blow-up games are fucking massive when they do happen. And I think it's one of those where if Kenny Golladay has a rough-ass matchup, it's very easy where you can look at your team and just be like, all right, I'm going to flex Marvin Jones this week because he's going to destroy whoever the fuck he's on. And we've called a bunch of weeks like that in the last couple of years when he's been on the Lions.
Yeah, definitely. You can – it's a dangerous game trying to predict Marvin Jones spike weeks. You know, I'm playing devil's advocate with myself right now with the points that I'm making. but like, it, cause, and it's really because I don't know, because on paper, like, you know, he seems like such a good option, but he's going to be inconsistent. I think he should be drafted a little bit higher than wide receiver 41, just because you are going to get some of those spike weeks. And if you time him right, goddamn, you are going to be happy. That 1 week with four touchdowns last year, pretty wild. And even outside of that, he had two other weeks with over 100 yards. So, you know, interesting guy, a guy that I'm not necessarily going out of my way to target right now, but I do think should be higher than wide receiver 41.
If you miss out on Galladay, are you going to target Marvin Jones more so just to get like a piece of the action, or are you just kind of looking elsewhere?
That's interesting. I don't know if I'm targeting him more in any sort of way, but one thing that just brought to mind, so bear with me because I'm like, you know, talking this out on air here.
Work it out.
But if you have Galladay as your wide receiver one and Jones as your flex, like the Amendola games, you're just going to be like, fuck. But like most of the time, you're getting the entirety of Detroit's like big time passing production. Do you think that sucks?
I think it sucks usually when you own two wide receivers in the same game. It's very difficult. I mean, I don't know, because you're really
– But these guys are such spike weak guys, you know. Even Galladay, like –
But to have both of them?
You're guaranteeing yourself a spike week from one of them almost. I mean, outside of like – the three games of the year where it's either Amendola or Hockenson. Maybe it's more than three for Hockenson this year. I don't know.
It's an incredibly like, interesting strategy, though.
I think you're guaranteeing yourself like 12 spike games like during the year. You know, like that's awesome. And even if the other guy doesn't perform, if Galladay and Jones combine for fucking 40 fantasy points every week, who cares whether it's 30 points from one and 10 from the other, or like, you know, like it doesn't matter.
This is hard to wrap my head around. Like it really is. I'm just like, this is, it makes total sense. But every single week, if I'm putting both of these guys in, I would just be very, very confused.
That's definitely fair. And that's probably more like for a league where you're starting three wide receivers rather than two. And then maybe you have a, you know, a wide receiver eligible flex. You know, maybe that's more of a strategy for that, where you can sort of guarantee yourself a little bit more of a floor.
You're also really putting all your eggs in one basket. You're just like, all right, Detroit Lions, I'm all the fuck in.
And then I'm going to draft Stafford in like the 10th round. And that's
Hockenson maybe too.
Yeah. Just stack the Lions and carry it to a fifth place finish.
Yeah. Really get all the boom weeks from the Lions.
Okay, maybe I'm getting a little bit overboard here. I'm getting a little bit excited. But do you have differing opinions on Amendola not being drafted?
No, that's totally fine. He was fool's gold many weeks. So it's just like, you know, he'll pop up every now and then and just don't pick him up.
Okay, fair enough. And then the other thing we should mention with the wide receivers is they did sign Geronimo Allison. You know, my expectation is that the starters will stay the same. And Allison will sort like, if any one of these guys were to get hurt, I would assume that Allison would just move into that role. I know he's primarily been a slot guy, but the situation just strikes me as one where he, you know, like he's the first guy off the bench for whatever position is needed.
Yeah, I don't really see him making a huge impact. I don't know why the Lions even saw fit to, like, take him away from the Packers, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's just depth at that point. All right, so let's move on to tight end, where we've got TJ Hockenson going into his second year. You know, we spent the entire summer last year saying that rookie tight ends don't produce, and then TJ Hockenson came out and went nuts week one, and then the rest of the season he didn't produce. So we were right in the long term.
We also stuck to our guns, I believe. We're just like, don't like, – you could pick them up, but this is not going to happen a lot.
So yeah, I think you're right on that. you know, he had 3 6 plus target games with Matthew Stafford out of those eight. He's currently going as tight end 15, the second pick in the 13th round. Fine. I'm not targeting him in particular. Are you?
No, not really. Again, probably going to say this every time we talk tight end. I don't fucking care, but it's just funny to see the drop off from like him going top 10 last year to now. It's just like, I never understand the drop offs because he can only get better, but he also got fucked up, like concussed. So I feel like he's just going to improve, but if you're going to pick him late, again, you're probably going to ride on some boom or bust weeks big time. And I don't really feel like the target share is going to be there for him like it is with some other tight ends.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. I'm trying to have a different tight end strategy than picking TJ Hawkinson. I'll say that. So let's move to the running game. And before we jump into that, just touching on the offensive line, last year they were 20th in you know, rushing offensive line production, according to Football Outsiders, 19th in passing. They got rid of Graham Glasgow, but they did sign Vitae from Philly to a gigantic deal. And he's pretty much an upgrade. He played guard for Philly last year, but, you know, is expected to play tackle for the Lions. I think this is a pretty good offensive line situation. I think it can help both the running game and the passing game. And I think it can build on last year's production for sure. That being said, we've got Kerryon Johnson as the assumed early down running back. You know, he only had 15 targets in his 8 games last year. And now we've got DeAndre Swift as the guy who will likely be the pass catching back for the team. You know, he was widely considered the best pass catching back in the draft this year. It was kind of a surprise when they took him when they did. I certainly did not expect it. I think team value wise, they could have made a better pick than that. But we're here. We have DeAndre Swift. We have Kerryon Johnson. I was flabbergasted today when I looked at these ADPs, and maybe I shouldn't have been, but Kerryon Johnson going RB42, fifth pick in the 9th round, DeAndre Swift going 3 rounds earlier, RB29, second pick in the 6th round. Like, does that seem right to you?
No, it doesn't. But it's just, I think people falling off the hype of Kerryon Johnson after last year, where he didn't really, you know, meet.
He was like a second round pick last year.
Yeah, everyone was really hard for him, but it was like, you're making a mistake here. And then I think people are overcorrecting that. And then I think banking on the fact that Stafford's going to pass a ton to the pass catching back, who will probably be DeAndre Swift, but that's egregious in ADP. And I don't know how this is going to change outside of an injury, but it looks like people are already like pumping up Swift pretty hard.
Yeah. I mean, Ty Johnson and JD McKissic combined for 73 targets last year. So like, I guess if you're like, you know, just doing one-to-one math, you can be like, DeAndre Swift's going to get 73 targets. Like, he'll probably get 100 carries too. Like, is that a 6th round pick? Like, maybe, I don't know, but like Kerryon Johnson's going to be the goal line back. He's going to be the guy on.
He'll catch a few passes too. Like, it's amazing that everyone goes from Kerryon Johnson to be a workhorse back to, all right, I'm going to catch the guy who's going to have exclusive passing down work. It's like, no, because Kerryon Johnson can still do that. He just hasn't been healthy, carrying a full workload. And if these ADP stay, I might be more inclined to take Kerryon Johnson, even though this backfield is always kind of fucked. And Patricia's trying to be like a baby Belichick here, but it's not really something that I'm looking to do. But if Kerryon stays this low, I can't help but look at him.
That's a fucking screaming value. Like, you know, it's right there.
I just can't believe how people fall off guys like that. Like, he was such a good, like, upside kind of pick, and then it just kind of didn't work out. So all of a sudden, it's just like, toss it in the trash. Swift is the dude.
And he's still a guy where, like, I believe in his talent. Like, when he's had opportunities to catch passes and be the, like, up until last year, like, the whole thing was, like, give Kerryon the full-time job, make him a workhorse. And now it's like, he's not good enough to be drafted ahead of like fucking Jordan Howard, you know, like
he's not good enough to get drafted ahead of a fucking rookie that just got taken as of right now.
Another point again, like, you know, I said, I like Stafford and that sort of thing. I don't think these are mutually exclusive, but like the Lions defense was 28th in DVOA last year. I think their defense got significantly better because if we look at the people who left, at the people that they lost. Pretty much the only one who did jack shit last year was Devon Kennard, their outside linebacker, like pass rusher type guy. You know, they lost three defensive tackles, none of whom, you know, Damon Harrison, Mike Daniels, and Ashawn Robinson, none of whom were like crazy good last year. I know Darius Slay is a good cornerback. He was, Pro Football Focus had him graded 85th out of 115 cornerbacks last year. Like, he was dealing with injury and he wasn't good. You know, they lost Rashawn Melvin, 90th cornerback out of 115. And the guys they got to replace him were Jamie Collins at outside linebacker, who was 16th out of 89 in terms of PFF's linebacker ranks. They got Desmond Trufant, 34th ranked cornerback, who we know was a lockdown guy with Atlanta for a while. They drafted Jeff Okuda, third overall pick out of Ohio State, to be the cornerback opposite him. He's ready to play. And they brought in defensive tackles Nick Williams and Danny Shelton, who PFF had 53rd and 40th, respectively, out of 118 at interior defensive linemen. Like, I think this defense got better. And so, like, maybe they're not – and they're going to win more than three games, too. So, like, maybe they're not going to be passing the ball at quite as much. Maybe they can use Kerryon when they get ahead in some games. You know, it's just – if you kind of like read through everything that's happening, it's all seeming like Kerryon's just very undervalued at that specific point.
Yeah, no, fully agree with you on that.
All right. Do we have anything else on the Lions or should we move on to the Bears?
I guess we'll move on to the Bears.
All right. Let's take a quick break first and then we will be right back to preview the Chicago Bears.
Have you thought about trying sports betting but aren't sure how it'll go? Our friends at FanDuel are giving away a $50 sign-up bonus at letstalkfantasyfootball.com/FanDuel-sportsbook.
All right, guys, we are back, and we are ready to move on to the Chicago Bears, who last year finished with a record of 8-8. That is another thing that surprised me when I was looking up everything for this. I thought they were way worse than 8-8, but they were 8-8.
Yeah, they were as bad as you remember. That is correct. But they were a fringe, like, wild card team. They were in the hunt for about 85% of the season, which is fucking wild.
It's like when, like, the fact that, like, the Titans have been, like, 8-8 or better for, like, the past 6 years, and you're like, wait a minute, what the fuck? Like, that kind of shit.
Well, I mean, when you have Jeff Fisher, like, that's a stat that's going to exist.
Right, of course. And so they finished 8-8 last year. Their 2020 win total is 8. And that's another thing where, spoiler alert for how I feel on the Bears, I found that out this morning and I immediately put $50 on the under. It was just like, is this fucking real? Like,
there you go, man. Perfect.
Yeah. The only difference in the coaching staff going into this year is Bill Lazor, former fame as the Bengals offensive coordinator.
Yes, that's his big claim to fame. I will never forget that one game where the Bengals played the Packers, where Bill Lazor was stepping in for the first time and just peppered A.J. Green. Like, I think it was the most targeted he's ever been in his career. I'm just like, that is how you keep a job all season.
Yeah.
And he did, even though he was terrible.
Yeah. Well, he is now the offensive coordinator for the Bears, replacing Mark Helfrich, who was fired despite not being the play caller. Matt Nagy is still the play caller, and I would assume that would be the case going forward. So the Bears are an interesting team, right? Because 2018 for them was so good. The defense was incredible. Matt Nagy looked like a play calling genius. Trubisky was running the ball as well as throwing it, like, well enough to get away with it, you know? Mm-hmm. And then last year happens, and it seems like, you know, the defense regresses, and we talked about with the Patriots last week. The defense goes from best in the league to 8th in the league, which isn't bad, but it's not best in the league. So, you know, that happens. Trubisky appears to not really be able to run anymore, or they don't want to use him as a running quarterback. And really just the whole team sort of falls apart in a weird way. So, you know, coming into this year, we've got Bill Lazor in there. They traded a 4th-round pick to get Nick Foles and crazy. Then restructured his contract. Yeah, you trade a 4th-round pick for Nick Foles and Jameis Winston gets paid $1 million. Like, are you fucking kidding me? But anyway, yeah. hammer that fucking under with this team. And we'll get into the reasons why. I guess let's just go into the positions for now, and then we can kind of see where you know the wind takes us on this one.
So I think it'll explain itself.
Yeah. At quarterback, you know, it's weird because all the depth charts that I looked up had Mitch Trubisky still as the starter. To me, it seems like Nick Foles is obviously going to start. You don't trade for him in this situation and not pick up Trubisky's option.
I disagree. I think they're going to let Trubisky go out there and either do really well or fail, which is exactly what's – like, that's just going to be – there's no way Foles starts the season.
Are you serious?
Yeah. You want to make
a bet? I think there's no way – yeah, I do.
Okay, I guarantee – all right. Injury, scratch the whole thing. They're both healthy. Going in week one, I say Trubisky 100%.
Okay, I say Foles. I know we made a bet last week. I have no idea what it was.
So I don't remember any of the bets we make, but they're here. So
yeah. If someone wants to like let us know all the bets that we make, cool. If not, also cool. Yeah, I think it's 100% going to be Foles. I mean, within the fantasy community, neither are getting drafted in 16-team PPR. Or 12-team PPR. But, like, Trubisky actually is going ahead of Foles. So I guess that's the assumption is he's going to start. But to me, like, when they traded for him, I was just like, okay, Nick Foles is now the starter.
Oh, well, you forgot that the Bears are poorly run.
Right. That's true. That is a good point.
They have 10 tight ends and 2 quarterbacks, and Nick Foles is costing them so much money.
They are actually down to 9 tight ends, and they restructured Nick Foles' contract. So,
That's my bad. I should really keep up on these fucking huge headlines. what was the restructure like?
And I actually don't know the details.
And who got the axe of the tight ends?
That part I also don't know. It was not Jesper Horsted. It was not yet Adam Shaheen. It was not Ben Broniker. All of those guys are still on the team.
Good for them.
That was weirdly a rhyme, but
I honestly didn't even notice. I can't wait to listen back to that.
Let me see. I'm looking up Foles' restructured deal. Great audio. They restructured it because it was originally a 4-year, $81 million deal.
Crazy.
There was 1 year off of that. They restructured it to 3 years, $24 million, with $21 million of it still guaranteed.
Oh, okay.
You're going to pay $21 million in guaranteed money to your fucking backup quarterback? Are you kidding me?
For 3 years, that's not bad, especially when Trubisky just fucking tanks after week one, man. Of course.
All right. Well, we'll agree to disagree on that one. You know, neither of these guys are fantasy relevant, I think, until proven otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the reasons that I am so high on Allen Robinson is because, believe it or not, if Nick Foles is their starting quarterback, Allen Robinson will be playing with the best quarterback that he has ever played with, which, again, is like one of those statements where you're like, how can this be real? But then you look at the quarterbacks that Allen Robinson has played with. And you realize it's Blake Bortles and Mitch Trubisky for the most part. And it's real. So.
And somehow he is just a fucking stud.
Oh, yeah.
Through and through.
Yeah, last year he was PPR wide receiver 8, averaging 15.9 points per game, and he had 154 targets. He was a guy you could throw in your starting lineup and be comfortable with every single week of the season, even in bad matchups. So if he has someone that's not Mitch Trubisky throwing to him, like, even though it's Nick Foles, like, I mean, I'm just praying for the fucking day that Allen Robinson gets like an actual quarterback, you know, like even if it's just like, okay, Allen Robinson is now catching passes from Baker Mayfield or like from fucking, I don't know, like take your pick of like mediocre quarterbacks, you know, just like.
I'm trying to think who would the funniest be. Definitely Jameis after he takes over for Breeze. And they just ship Robinson down there.
And they both become just extremely elite because of it. But no, I mean, Allen Robinson last year dominated the targets for this team. I know they were dealing with injuries, but if you look at really like the situation sort of around him, did I not put the tight end? Oh, no, I did. If you look at the situation around him, not much has changed. Like, they got rid of Taylor Gabriel, fine. They got rid of Trey Burton, replaced him with Jimmy Graham and 800 other tight ends. Like, fine, whatever. Like, Allen Robinson is pretty much on target, I think. And, you know, a little bit of a spoiler for later. I think they're going to have a worse defense and they're going to need to throw the ball more. So I think Allen Robinson is on target for another 150 targets this year if he stays healthy.
Yeah, I really don't see any other reason to argue against that. He's very good. And even if it's Trubisky, Foles, whatever, he'll get the targets. He'll get it done.
He's currently going wide receiver 13, 11th pick in the third round. To me, it's a debate between him and Galladay. Like,
good fucking question.
Robinson's a top 10 tight end. Wide receiver, I think.
Indeed.
In this draft, like, he's not wide receiver 13. I think he's top 10 for me.
Oh, I would, I think I would take Galladay there just because I like the security of Stafford way more than anything going on in the Bears quarterback situation.
That's definitely fair. And I don't think you're wrong. I don't think there's a receiver going ahead of Galladay that I would take Robinson over, just looking at them. But I mean, like, after Galladay and in between Robinson, you have Thielen, Amari Cooper, Cooper Kupp, Odell Beckham. I can 100% tell you I would take him over Cooper Kupp and Odell Beckham. I think I probably would over Thielen as well. And Cooper to me is a debate.
I would go Robinson over Cooper just because Dallas added a few other weapons and I like the security of what Robinson is going to get volume wise.
Yeah. I mean, you're completely correct in those thoughts. I think, you know, he's another guy who I think is currently a value going off the board right now. And we'll see what happens going through the rest of the summer. Getting to the rest of the wide receivers. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, do you remember where he was going last year? Because it was like seventh, eighth round. It was fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, and I mean, like, that was kind of understandable because in 2018, coming off of his ACL injury, he kind of had a slow return to form. But last year, like, he was in form and you know, he was one of the best wide receivers in the league and one of the most consistent wide receivers in the league with Mitch Trubisky at the helm. You know, we've talked about it enough. Let's move on to the rest of the receivers here. Anthony Miller is, I guess, the de facto number two at this point because Taylor Gabriel is gone. I don't know whether he's going to play in the slot or not, or whether he's just going to be on the outside. You know, previously he had been in the slot. But from week 11 on last year, Anthony Miller averaged 7.9 targets a game. He did have a significant amount of variance with the peak being 15 and the low being 1. So it's not like bankable production, but he's definitely got a lot of upside. He's a guy where they signed Ted Ginn. They still have Cordarrelle Patterson. I guess maybe the move is to have Ted Ginn as the burner opposite Robinson and then Miller in the slot. Does that make sense?
And then when they go 4 wide, they just have like Patterson and Ginn just running deep as fuck.
I guess, or maybe they just put Patterson in the backfield considering he's a better running back than David fucking Montgomery. But and another spoiler for later, maybe. Miller's currently going wide receiver 50, like 11th round. I can't hate anyone for taking that pick. And I also think, like, if you throw him into the 8th, 9th, 10th rounds, I'm fine with that as well.
I'm really not about it. It's really Robinson or bust for me. I'm not going to target anyone else in the passing game for this team. Like, it's just Allen Robinson, de facto number one through and through, and I'm not really going to try and glean anything else out of the other weapons.
That's definitely a fair way to look at it. I don't think it's the wrong way, but there's definitely some upside in Miller, I think, as well. The other guys are going to be way too inconsistent. At tight end, they signed Jimmy Graham. They drafted Cole Kmet. They also have Demetrius Harris, Ben Broniker, and Adam Shaheen. And they have about 4 more guys that I did not list out still on their depth chart. Cole Kmet was the second-round rookie out of Notre Dame, first tight end off the board. I mean, Jimmy Graham, they paid a lot of money to. He looked fucking washed last year. He looked bad. Cole Kmet, rookie tight ends don't do things, particularly when they're not getting 100% snaps. And if we're not taking either of those two, then why would we take anyone else?
Yeah, exactly. Don't waste your time here.
All right, let's move to the running backs. So David Montgomery, really got like the workhorse sort of treatment last year from week eight on. He only averaged 3.767 yards per carry and only got 35 targets on the year, but he was the de facto workhorse. He got all the goal line work. He was definitely usable on certain weeks. He's currently going as running back 24, the sixth pick in the fourth round. I'm just like so unopinionated on David Montgomery. You know, I don't know.
I have a hard time with it too. I just really don't know where to go with it. Like, he could be the workhorse, but resulted in like less than Dick last year. Like, it wasn't worth it at all. I don't really know. And I like Tariq Cohen as a player more so than him. So I feel like they should use Cohen a lot more, and seems like kind of the James White to his whatever the fuck. So I would probably be more likely to target Cohen in a draft than Montgomery anywhere. I would have to really, really panic if I'm grabbing Montgomery.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of Montgomery's production, and I like the point you made about Cohen, but and for adjusted line yards, which is Football Outsiders, like rushing offensive line stat, basically, they were 29th in the league last year. And the only change in the offensive line is that they lost their best tackle.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's not good.
Yeah, like the offensive line is going to suck ass. Like, they're going to be a bad offensive line. And you could see that last year because Montgomery have anywhere to run.
Yeah.
Like, that's not changing this year unless the offensive line just like miraculously gels, which sometimes offensive lines do, you know. It's like, it's a weird skill position. It's a weird position group where like chemistry matters a lot and a whole bunch of things that are very hard to predict matter a lot. But I think any reasonable person would say their offensive line was bad last year and is also going to be bad this year. So that's why I don't see a huge jump in production from Montgomery year over year, because they're not going to increase his pass work with Cohen there. Cohen got 104 targets last year, second only to Christian McCaffrey at the running back position. And I know Cohen played some of the year as slot receiver, particularly before Miller got completely healthy. But still, 104 targets is 104 targets. This isn't going to be a good offensive line. It's not going to be a good run game. I also think their defense is going to be way worse than the eighth ranked defense in the league. And I guess while we're talking about it, let's just jump into that now. Mm-hmm. They lost Leonard Floyd as an edge rusher. Nick Kwiatkowski, who went to the Las Vegas Raiders, linebacker 15 out of 89 for PFF last year. They lost defensive tackle Nick Williams, who is about a middle-of-the-road type guy. They lost safety Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, who is 19th out of 84 for PFF. They lost outside linebacker Kevin Pierre-Lewis, cornerback Prince Amukamara, who is 45th out of 115 cornerbacks. They lost a lot of fucking people. In terms of recognizable names on this defense from like the vaunted 2018 Bears defense, it's basically Khalil Mack at outside linebacker, Akeem Hicks at defensive tackle, and Kyle Fuller at cornerback. And yes, they picked up Robert Quinn. You know, they picked up a couple other guys who don't really matter too much, who aren't that good. And I would argue that Robert Quinn is more about reputation than actual production at this point in his career.
Robert Quinn was pretty great in the Cowboys last year.
Yeah, I mean,
That's a pretty nasty pass rush, though.
He hasn't been. Yeah, I mean, Quinn and Mack is obviously going to be like pretty fearsome. But I mean, and Akeem Hicks is a great run stopper in the middle. Like, this isn't going to be the same Bears defense. I know they went from 1-8 last year in DVOA. Like, to me, they're middle of the pack to like they're 15-25 in DVOA this year.
And to be honest, you said Kyle Fuller's name. I don't really consider him like an elite player. I think like he gets burned constantly. He's one of those guys you target a lot.
He's one of those guys who's good relative to how good the pass rush is, I think. If the pass rush is good, then he's going to be good. And if it's not, then he's not going to be good.
Yeah, he's going to get beat up. He is very advantageous on his interceptions, though, I will say that. But that, I think, has a lot to do with what you said to the pass rush.
He's like a Marcus Peters type, you know.
He'll gamble a ton and lose a lot.
Yeah, so all that being said, I think they're going to be losing a lot more. I already told you I wanted to bet the under.
Is it 8.5 or 8 flat?
I saw 8 flat today.
That sucks because they could push.
Don't care. They're going to win like five games.
I agree, but you're right. Never.
But getting back to the point in fantasy that I was trying to make, that's worse for David Montgomery. If the defense is bad, they're going to be down a lot more. And David Montgomery is not a pass-catching back. Tariq Cohen is the pass-catching back. So I know I said I was opinionless on him, but just like he's a guy like I just don't want. I don't want to deal with it this year.
Montgomery, right?
Yes.
Okay, because I thought you were talking about Cohen. I'm like, I'm all over that shit.
Oh, so, yeah, I'm also going to be all over Cohen.
Yeah.
So you can fight me for it.
No, I will. And for perspective, when we were talking about DeAndre Swift not fucking 10 minutes ago, he's going in the sixth round, and you have someone with the same exact skill set, possibly the same upside, if not more, going in the ninth.
Ten. Yeah, I mean, I said vacated targets last year from Ty Johnson and J.D. McKissick were 73 for DeAndre Smith. Tariq Cohen already got 104 last year, and he's going three rounds later.
Yeah, dude, you know what you're getting. Cohen is, like, disgusting when you watch him play. Like, he is Darren Sproles reincarnated. So it's a lot of fun to watch him, and I know he can have, like, games where he just won't be involved, but that's when you got to pick and choose and see where the matchups are going. And also, you know, we're expecting them to be a very bad team, so they will have to pass a ton. I really just don't see anything going different, and it's a huge fucking value right here.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, we're in agreement on a lot of things here, and this is definitely one of them. So, I will be targeting Cohen again. I'm not going to, like I said, fight me, but like, I'm not going to like fight you if you take him in like the seventh round or whatever, you know?
Well, no, that's stupid. We could still fight.
We can still get mad when one of us takes him late eighth.
Oh, I was just about to do that. Fuck.
Classic line after you've, you know, played 1 year of fantasy football. Anyway, I think that pretty much does it for the Bears. I think we've gotten into everything we needed to. Do you have anything else for the people before we let them go?
No, I just want to make it clear. Lions over, Bears under.
Correct.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I realized you can't parlay. Well, at least on DraftKings, you can't fucking parlay the win-loss stuff.
Well, you can't parlay divisions, I would assume. I don't know. Maybe you can't just parlay win-losses in general.
I think so.
I've only tried to bet them outright, so.
And they weren't up on FanDuel yet, so. I do want to do a parlay for each division off the, like the shit that we talk over the off-season. Okay. So.
Yeah, yeah. It would be fun to see if, like, we should at least, like write it down and, like, actually keep track of these things that we say.
I do have it already, so I have my little bookkeeping.
Okay.
So well, I know this because I tried to make one for the AFC East, which we already went over.
Yeah. So if you guys want to hook for part two, we're going to figure out which side of the over-under we're going to bet for the Vikings and the Packers. All right. I think that should do it for part one. Vinny and I will be back for part two of the NFC North. That will be Vikings and Packers, as I just said. Thank you guys for joining us. Thank you for giving us your time. For Vinny, I am Walsh. Later, podcast.
This has been Let's Talk Fantasy Football. Thanks for listening.